Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on fluoridation when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. Now, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes, our politicians, beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It doesn't come from our politicians, our lawyers, or our bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I could echo that by saying, you give me the judicial power and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in America is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to learn how to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package, or you can stream it, either one, and you can view it right there in the privacy of your own home, and I don't even have to send it in a plain brown envelope. Again, that's georgegordon.org or georgegordon.com for the download. Well, let's take a look at the question of fluoride. Now, we were looking at quacks and quackery last time. There's another little piece to this quackery story here called fluoride. So we'll just entitle this Fluoridation of the Water Supplies. It's one of the four holy waters of modern medicine, remember? Robert Mendelssohn identified these four fluids or these four holy waters as immunization number one. Fluoridated water is number two. Intravenous fluids is number three. And silver nitrate is number four. And remember Robert Mendelssohn, now he's written a number of books on the subjects of health and modern medicine. You can pick up his books in any health food store. Any health food store. And he wrote a bunch of them. And he's pretty funny. I think you'll like him. Now remember, he was a pediatrician, he was a doctor, and better than that, he was a teaching doctor. He actually taught doctors medicine in the university, in the college. So he's not just a doctor who is speaking out about the AMA. He is one of the insiders who are actually one of the teachers here, and he said, How to raise a healthy child in spite of your pediatrician, in spite of the inoculations that are going around or that are going on, there's a way to get around that. Mendelsohn offered a number of solutions to the medical dilemma. But in addition to that, our author here, Eustace Mullins, put a chapter in here on fluoridation. It's chapter 5, 20 pages. And it deals with this thing of fluoride. Now, in America today, you know, fluoride is about as common as aspirin. And nobody is concerned about the amount of fluoride that they're ingesting. We maybe believe that there might be some controversy over it, but everybody accepts it. Now, there are some water supplies in the United States that are not fluoridated. Tulsa, Oklahoma is one. Around the world, there are some water supplies that don't have fluoride in them, or chlorine for that matter. But that it's not very common, at least not here in the United States. Now, around the world, fluoride might not be common, but here in the United States, it's as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. And in fact, it is so common and so well accepted here in the United States, it's actually not a subject matter any longer. 25, 30, 40 years ago, it used to generate some excitement. But today, there's no excitement at all, and nobody is concerned about it. Nobody talks about it. So I thought, well, now here's a story. Here's a story that we probably ought to be familiar with, because it's part and parcel with this whole thing of murder by injection. It's the story of the medical conspiracy against America. You can rest assured that people like George Bush or David Rockefeller and Bill Clinton do not drink fluoridated water. I can just bet on it. They don't do that. Oh, they might drink a glass of water or two sips when they're in a restaurant, but the bottom line is that people in the know drink bottled water, or they have water filters to filter the fluoride and the chlorine out, or they make sure that their water source, that's what I do here. See, I have a water source, and I make sure that when we travel on the road, we take our water with us. You know, if I travel, I try to travel by motorhome, and then I load up 30, 40 gallons of water in my motorhome. I'll fill my tanks here, and then I'll fill gallon jugs, and I make sure that we don't drink water on the road. Now, most people would look at that and say, you know, that guy's a fanatic. And you're right, I am. I don't deny it. I'm a fanatic. And that's because this fluoride is such a deadly, toxic poison that I want to avoid it at every possible turn. And I'm getting fluoride. I don't deny that. I'm getting it. And so I use activated charcoal to chelate it out of my body. I'm a great believer in charcoal. And we'll talk a little about charcoal and how to get the stuff out of your body. You know, most of you have a lot of it in you. But you're getting it not just from the water supply. You're getting it from the food you eat. Let's suppose that you went into the store and you bought a TV dinner. The water that's in the TV dinner, where did you think that Marie Callender got that water? They got it right out of the tap, right out of the fluoridated water supply, wherever that factory is located. So all of your foods that you're buying, you know, you buy a can of corn in the grocery store, and you in the water that's in that corn, you know, where did you think that water came from? It came from the fluoridated water supply of Del Monte or Libby, wherever their factories and plants are located. So unless it's marked organic, and I'm not sure that the organic people are filtering out the fluoridated water or using clean, pure water. They may or may not, but nobody's required to put in the amount of fluoride that's in the canned foods that you're eating or in the products that you're drinking, like the can of Coca-Cola or whatever. Where did that water come from? So tuck that one away in your heart. Fluoride is everywhere in our environment here in the United States, and every American is getting some fluoride. Now, the trick here is, can you limit the amount of fluoride? I mean, we don't want to take very much. And if we could get down to zero, that would be very idyllic. I don't think any of us are going to get down to zero. But, you know, if we could cut it in half, that would be a step in the right direction. Now, remember, Mendelssohn said the second item on the list of four holy waters of the modern Church of Medicine is the fluoridation of the nation's drinking water. And although Dr. Mendelssohn dismisses fluoride, too, as of questionable value, few dare to question it. And we're told that it confers untold benefits to the rising generation, guaranteeing them perpetual freedom from tooth decay and no need for any dental work. Surprisingly enough, the National Fluoridation Campaign is enthusiastically supported by the nation's dental profession, even though it might be expected that it would put them all out of business. Here again, those in the know are well aware that the fluoridation program, far from threatening to put the dentists out of business, actually will offer them plenty of work in the future. Now, the principal source of the fluoridation is a poisonous chemical called sodium fluoride, which has long been the principal ingredient of rat poison. Now, whether the adding of this compound to our drinking water is also part of a rat control program has never been publicly discussed. The Environmental Protection Agency released its latest estimate that 38 million Americans are now drinking unsafe water, which contains unsafe levels of chlorine, lead, and other toxic substances. Fluoride is not listed as one of the toxic substances. The Environmental Protection Agency, like other government agencies, has carefully refrained from either testing public drinking water for the effects of fluoridation or from poaching on the preserves of the Rockefeller monopoly, which launched the National Fluoridation Campaign in the first place. The byproduct of the manufacture of aluminum, sodium fluoride, had long posed a problem. Except for its limited use as a rat poison, other popular uses were limited by its extremely poisonous nature. It also was very expensive for the aluminum companies to dispose of because of its persistence. It does not degrade. It is also cumulative in your body, so that every day you add a little more to your sodium fluoride reserves each time you drink a glass of water. It is puzzling, then, to find that the historical record shows that the principal sponsor and promoter of the fluoridation of the nation's drinking water was the United States Public Health Service, and thereby hangs a tale. We may recall the heady days of the 1950s when public health officials were routinely sent out from Washington to appear at meetings where communities were anxiously debating the pros and cons of water fluoridation. And without exception, those public servants not only reassured the anxious citizens, they positively demanded that the communities fluoridate their drinking water. And although they unequivocally endorsed the fluoridation of water supplies, not one of these public health officials had ever conducted any studies on fluoridated water, nor had they ever made any experiments as to its possible benefits or dangers. Yet, at meeting after meeting throughout the United States, they rose to solemnly guarantee that there were no dangers and that there were no side effects, only positive benefits on children under the age of 12. Fluoridation, even according to its most enthusiastic supporters, confers no benefits on anyone older than 12 years. No sensible reason has ever been advanced as to why all water supplies should be fluoridated in order to benefit a minority of our population. Did these public servants know what they were doing? Of course not. They were following a tradition of the bureaucracy, which takes its orders from the medical monopoly. Now, how did they get these orders? Well, that too is a very interesting story. The U.S. Public Health Service continues to propagandize at taxpayers' expense for expansion of fluoridation. The Washington Post noted on April 20, 1988, for instance, that the Public Health Service estimates that each year $2 billion is saved through water fluoridation. Our Public Health Service demurs on any statistical substantiation for this claim. Do the Public Health Service officials imply that the aluminum manufacturers save $2 billion a year through fluoridation of water? Because prior to the fluoridation of water, the aluminum manufacturers had to dispose of this stuff as a toxic chemical waste. And they had to spend buku bucks to dispose of it safely. You can't just flush it down the toilet and out into the local water purification program or down the Mississippi River, you know, to the next city. I mean, that stuff is so toxic, it is so deadly poison, that it has to be monitored everywhere that it's used. It's got to be moved around in such a way that stuff is watched like plutonium. It's like nuclear waste. That's how toxic it is. Now, to think that you're putting that into your drinking water, you know, is almost like digging up a dead body in Norway and bringing it back so that we can extricate and isolate the Spanish flu from 1918. That makes absolutely no sense at all, at least not to a farmer out here. I'm not suggesting that to all you scientists out there. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But to those of us out here that are the recipients of this stuff, it doesn't make any sense to us. We don't need it. We don't want it. And we're trying to avoid it. And you people are sticking it in our drinking water. Now, the head of the U.S. Public Health Service during the entire fluoridation campaign was a fellow by the name of Oscar Ewing. Ewing was a graduate of the Harvard Law School. Ewing was an airplane contractor during the First World War. He then joined the influential law firm of Sherman, Hughes, and Dwight, a very prestigious Wall Street company. The Hughes was none other than Charles Evans Hughes, the recent candidate for the presidency of the United States. Hughes lost his campaign against Woodrow Wilson because Wilson campaigned on his record that he kept us out of war. As soon as he was safely reelected, Wilson then declared war. Hughes later became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The firm was then Ewing and Hughes, and at the end of World War II, Ewing had himself appointed a special prosecutor for the Department of Justice. The appointment was made solely to conduct two prosecutions for the Rockefeller monopoly. It was the government's cases against two radio broadcasters, William Dudley Pelley and Robert Best. Now, both of these writers, longtime activists in America First, had campaigned to keep the United States out of what had turned out to be a very profitable war. They now had to be punished for their threat to the monopolists. Ewing had them both convicted and sent to prison. And for this service, he was then appointed chairman of the Democratic National Committee. The following year, in 1946, President Truman appointed him head of the Federal Security Agency, and in this capacity, he was in nominal charge of another radio broadcaster, Ezra Pound, who was being held as a political prisoner at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, a federal mental institution, which was also part of the Federal Security Agency's network. Pound was held for more than 13 years without trial. Long after Ewing had gone, the government dropped all charges against Pound and he was freed. However, Ewing had not been appointed administrator of the Federal Security Agency merely to prosecute Ezra Pound. there were more serious goals in view. Congressman Miller charged that Ewing had been paid a $750,000 fee to leave his profitable Wall Street practice and then head the Federal Security Agency. This fee had been paid by the Rockefeller interests. The purpose was to pursue a national fluoridation campaign. Ewing was made head of the Federal Security Agency because this position made him the most powerful bureaucrat in Washington. This agency encompassed the U.S. Public Health Service, the Social Security Administration, and the Office of Education. As head of the PSA, or the FSA, he was in charge of the vast government post-war spending programs, the federal health, education, and welfare programs. From this post, Ewing campaigned for greater government control over the citizens of the United States. And he was particularly anxious to increase control of medical education, which was a prime goal of the Rockefeller interests since 1898. On February the 17th, 1948, Ewing publicly called for government grants for medical scholarships and demanded that medical schools be operated under government subsidies with the inevitable accompanying government control. On March 30th, 1948, Ewing chaired a children's conference which was intended to coordinate all federal agencies which had any dealing with the nation's youth. He also became the national leader of a campaign against cancer, a result of his long association with the Drug Trust. He had been secretary of the giant Merck Drug Company from his offices on No. 1 Wall Street. One of Ewing's first moves as head of the Public Health Service was to throw out the longtime Surgeon General Thomas Perrin and replaced him with a Ewing crony, Dr. Leonard Scheel from the National Cancer Institute. In 1948, Ewing joined with the American Cancer Society in a national campaign against cancer, a flagrant attempt to force Congress to spend more on various cancer boondoggles than the modest expenditure of $14.5 million a year. On May 1, 1948, Ewing convened a national health convention in Washington, D.C., with some 800 delegates in attendance. The convention overwhelmingly approved Ewing's plea to enroll the United States in the United Nations, in the World Health Organization of the United Nations. Ewing also campaigned vigorously for national health insurance, or socialized medicine, but despite his great power in Washington, he was unable to overcome the continued opposition of Morris Fishbein and the American Medical Association. He then issued an official report from the Federal Security Agency. It was entitled, The Nation's Health. It was a 186-page report which called for a crash 10-year program to achieve his goal of socialized medicine in the United States. The climax of his political power came when he masterminded Harry Truman's successful campaign for election to the presidency in 1948. Truman had previously succeeded as heir apparent after the strange death of Franklin D. Roosevelt. If you want to know more about Franklin Roosevelt's death, see Dr. Emanuel Josephson's book with that title. Now, Ewing had already single-handedly obtained the naming of Truman as the vice presidential campaign in the 1944 Chicago Convention. And he could be said to have put Truman in the White House, as certainly as Bobst was later to put Richard Nixon in the White House. The 1948 election of Truman guaranteed Ewing that he could have anything he wanted in Washington. And what he wanted than what he had been paid to bring about was the national fluoridation of our drinking water. Oscar Ewing is a name totally unknown to Americans today. He left no monuments because he was the 20th century epitome of the ruthless, dedicated Soviet-style bureaucrat, answerable only to his masters, and contemptuous of the faceless masses over whom he exercised dictatorial powers. He wielded absolute control over the most important components of the new socialist bureaucracy which Roosevelt had built up in Washington, and he prepared these offices for cabinet status. Of his many bureaucratic mandates, perhaps none has had a more direct effect on every American than the fluoridation of our water supply. And Congressman Miller stated that the chief supporter of the fluoridation of water is the U.S. Public Health Service. And this is part of Mr. Ewing's Federal Security Agency. Now, Mr. Ewing is one of the highly paid lawyers for the Aluminum Company of America. And it was hardly accidental that Washington, D.C., where Oscar Ewing was king, was one of the first large American cities to fluoridate its water supply. And at the same time, congressmen and other politicians in Washington were privately alerted by Ewing's minions that they should be careful about ingesting the fluoridated water supplies themselves. Supplies of bottled water from mountain springs then appeared in every office on Capitol Hill. These have been maintained continuously ever since, and they're maintained at taxpayers' expense. One senator who went so far as to carry a small flask of spring water with him when he dined at Washington's most fashionable restaurants, assuring his dinner companions that not one drop of fluoridated water will ever pass my lips. Such are the guardians of our nation. Even without such government additives as chlorine and fluoride in the water itself, or the water itself may pose a serious threat to health. American pioneers often came down with an illness which they called milk sickness, which seems to have come from their water. Dr. N. M. Walker warns that in the average 70-year lifespan, the average human being ingests about 4,500 gallons of water containing some 300 pounds of lime. This intake of lime gradually ossifies the skeletal structure. In 1845, an English physician warned of the peril of ossification from drinking natural or spring water. When Congressman Miller reported on the floor of Congress that Oscar Ewing was promoting fluoridation because he had been the lawyer for the Aluminum Company of America, Alcoa, and that he had accepted a $750,000 fee to persuade him to undertake this program of government service, one would have thought that the public exposure of Ewing's motives would have shamed him, and perhaps influence him to step aside and let someone else take over the U.S. Public Health Service campaign to force fluoridation on the American people. This would underestimate the arrogance and the self-assurance of the 20th century bureaucrat. He ignored Congressman Miller's remarks and redoubled the pressure of the U.S. Public Health Service to put over fluoridation. He had the willing support of his underlings because the U.S. Public Health Service has never been in the service of the public. On the contrary, the officials of the Public Health Service have always been at the beck and call of the drug trust, pushing the latest fads from the medical monopoly and maintaining those ideals of public service which have purchased so many fine estates in the fashionable Leesburg suburban area for those who have been in the right place at the right time to serve the bureaucracy. Political power is translated into money. Money for those who use political goals for sale. Let's hang on right there and let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not eight schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the chapter on fluoridation from the book Murder by Injection, The Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America by Eustace Mullins. Now, this book is available. Keep in mind now that I can only hit the highlights of the various chapters. I can't cover it all for you. But if you'd like to get a copy of the book so that you can get all the details, go to bravenewbookstore.com. Probably the simplest, easiest thing to do. If you can't find it at your local the bookstore, I mean, you might try, you know, the used bookstore and ask them if they've got it in stock, or you might even go to Barnes & Noble or someplace like that and ask them. But if you run up against a brick wall and you can't find it, the best source for underground books, any book that you can't find out there in the real world, go to bravenewbookstore.com. Or you can call them at 512-480-2503. Again, that's area code 512-480-2503. They're also located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B in Austin, Texas. So if you're in and around Austin, Texas, you can actually go into the bookstore itself. The zip code is 78705. If you're outside the United States and you want to write them a letter, best way to get in touch with them is through the Internet. If you don't have Internet connections, then you can call them on the telephone, and if you can't call them on the telephone, then I guess you can write them a letter to Brave New Bookstore, 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, here in the United States, and the zip code is 78705. And we're talking about the fluoridation of our water supplies. This fluoridation, you may have heard, is bad for you. Now, nobody on Capitol Hill drinks fluoridated water. Taxpayers provide drinking water for all your senators and representatives. Now, if you're one of those senators and representatives, as I pointed out, the water supplies of the nation have now been fluoridated to such an extent that all of us are subjected to it in the foods that we eat, in the restaurants that we go to. When those people in the restaurants are cooking the food, they get the water out of the tap. They're not using pure, clean water. You might want to think about how do you chelate this accumulation of fluoride in your body out? How do you get it out? Now, that's a trick. It's not impossible. And then chelation is the modality that we use to do that, and charcoal. Just activated charcoal. Not the stuff that you get in charcoal briquettes now. It has to be medical grade. Or at least fish tank grade. I mean, it doesn't have to be medical grade. You could use the stuff out of that you use in your charcoal filter in your fish tank. That's what I give to my cows. But I usually buy the medical grade stuff right out of the drugstore. And you can take it in capsule form. You can put it in water and drink it. And then charcoal is a poison fighter. Charcoal will chelate that out of your body. Charcoal will neutralize it in your stomach. Now, after overseeing the installation of sodium fluoride equipment in most of the nation's large cities, an interest in which Chase Manhattan Bank showed a crucial concern. Oscar Ewing retired to Chapel Hill, North Carolina in 1953. Here he busied himself with building a 7,800-acre complex of office buildings under the name of the Research Triangle Corporation, triangle being a key Masonic symbol. These offices were promptly leased to a melange of federal and state agencies, many of which, not surprisingly, he had previously done business with when he was their boss in Washington. A former head of the Democratic National Committee usually has no difficulty in renting space to government agencies. Ewing's former law partner, Charles Evans Hughes, Jr., became Solicitor General of the United States while his father was still Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He later became a director of the New York Life Insurance Company, which was a J.P. Morgan-controlled firm whose office was at Number 1 Wall Street. This had also been Oscar Ewing's former business address. Fluorides have long been a source of contamination in the United States. Large quantities of this chemical are also produced by the giant chemical firms, American Agricultural Products Corporation, and the Hooker Chemical. Hooker Chemical became part of the Rockefeller network when Blanchette Hooker married into the Rockefeller family by marrying John D. Rockefeller III. The Florida plant of American Agricultural Products, enormous waste quantities of fluorides in preparing fertilizer from phosphate rock. Some of the fluoride wastes had been used in pesticides until the Department of Agriculture banned their use as being too dangerous to the public. Let me pause here for a second. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said you can't put fluoride in pesticides because it's too dangerous to the public. Let me ask you, boys and girls, how much of the chemical pesticides are you ingesting every year? Don't you avoid inhaling spray from chemical pesticides? Don't you avoid contact with chemical pesticides by wearing gloves when you're out working in the garden? This fluoride is so toxic that you can't use it in pesticides, although it is good as a pesticide. I mean, it kills on contact. And then you want to put that into your drinking water and drink it and say it's good for your little children. Which is one of the uses of fluoride. It so befuddles your mind that you can no longer think intelligently anymore. And that's what's happened to the American people. We have gotten to a place where we have been dumbed down through the use of fluoride to such a degree that Americans have simply lost their minds. They're no longer able to think rationally or intelligently anymore. Now, that doesn't include everybody, and especially those that are on the inside. They're not drinking fluoridated water, and they're avoiding it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, boys and girls, you and I need to get the fluoride in our bodies out. And then we need to avoid ingesting fluoride. Let's think about that for a minute. Now, the wastes that were then dumped into the ocean, despite specific Department of Agriculture rulings prohibiting that, Hooker Chemical is known to most Americans for the life-threatening chemical wastes found at Love Canal. Love Canal in New York. Studies by the National Academy of Science show that United States industries such as Hooker Chemical pump 100,000 tons of fluorides into the atmosphere each year. They pipe another 500,000 tons of fluorides into the nation's water supply each year. This is in addition to the amount of fluorides used in treating our drinking water. This scientific report further analyzes the effects of these fluorides on the human body. Its most dangerous effect is that it slows down the vitally important DNA repair enzyme activity of the immune system. Fluorides have this effect even in concentrations as low as one part per million. The standard dosage which the U.S. Public Health Service set for our drinking water. All right, so now let's take a look at that one. Your drinking water standards are one part per million, and at that level, it impairs your immune system. Now, this is one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that cancer and other degenerative diseases have taken off here in the United States. Remember, your immune system is the body function that keeps your body well and in good repair. Designed by God Himself. It's got 14 component parts. Works like a shot until you impair it. And fluoride is one of those chemicals that impairs your immune system. Now, once your immune system has been impaired, then it can no longer heal your body. That's why you get sick. You get sick when your immune system gets lowered to a level that it can no longer ward off disease or no longer repair itself. Going on, he says, at this concentration, fluorides are shown to cause serious chromosomal damage. The one part per million recommended by our conscientious public servants has also been shown in laboratory experiments to transform normal cells into cancer cells. American Academy of Science studies in 1963 showed that these low levels of fluorides resulted in a marked increase in melanotic tumors from 12 to 100% in experimental laboratory animals. It also caused interference with the body's production of important neurotransmitters and lowered their level in the brain. These neurotransmitters have the vital function of protecting against seizures, thus opening the possibility of major increases in strokes and brain damage because of the fluorides in the water. Lesser effects of fluorides, which have been noted in laboratory tests, are sudden mood changes, severe headaches, nausea, hallucination, irregular breathing, night twitching, damage to fetuses, and various forms of cancer. Government objections to these laboratory findings were raised by the quintessential bureaucrat, Dr. Frank J. Rauscher, the director of the National Cancer Institute, when he claimed that scientists within and without the National Cancer Program have found again that the fluoridation of drinking water does not contribute to a cancer burden for people. This claim, for which he offered no scientific verification, was sharply contested by a longtime scholar of the fluoridation controversy, Dr. John, let's see if I can spell this one for you. It's Y-I-A-M-O-U-Y-I-A-N-N-I-S. Yamioinesis. Dean Burke, another scientist, and in his authoritative work, Fluoride, the aging factor, which has never been refuted by any scientific study, Dr. Yamioinesis finds that from 30,000 to 50,000 deaths a year are directly traceable to fluoridation, and from 10 to 20,000 of these deaths being from fluoride-induced cancers. Okay, now let me pause here for a moment. A book written by this doctor, Yamioinesis, Dean Burke, and other scientists, in his authoritative work, it's called Fluoride. Just the word fluoride. And the doctor's name is Yamouyiannis. Dean Burke and other scientists in the book called Fluoride, The Aging Factor. That's a scientific study on it. Nobody's ever refuted it. And that's because fluoride is bad stuff. It has been researched. Everybody that knows anything about it knows that it's bad stuff, and avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And that includes every one of your 535 lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Do not drink the water from the water system in Washington, D.C. And you can rest assured that President Obama does not drink that water. Now, although some communities have since revoked their agreements to allow fluoridation of their public drinking water, the national campaign continues unabated. No government official has ever admitted that there might be dangers associated with the Ewing probe, which resulted in the fluoridation of the nation's drinking water. West Germany banned fluoridation on November 18, 1971, which was surprising because this is a militarily occupied nation, which is run by the top secret German Marshall Fund and the John J. McCloy Foundation. Apparently, they could no longer silence the German scientists who have proved that fluoridation is a deadly threat to the population. Sweden then followed West Germany in banning fluoridation, and the Netherlands officially banned it on June 22, 1973, by order of their highest court. It is of some interest to contemplate the process by which the government bureaucrats arrived at the recommended dosage for fluoridating public drinking water, that is, one part per million. Now, extensive studies have been made, deliberations gone over by distinguished scientists over a period of years before it was finally determined that this was the correct dosage, one part per million. In fact, no such studies have ever been made. Apparently, the figure of one part per million was selected arbitrarily. It was known that 10 parts per million was much too strong. After several years of using the one part per million dosage, government bureaucrats realized that they had made a terrible mistake. The dosage was at least twice as strong as it should have been, and the death rates among elderly people from kidneys and heart disease began to rise steadily in the first cities to begin fluoridating their water. One critic believes this was a deliberate decision, called the final solution to the problem of Social Security payments. When scientists found that one part per million dosage of fluoridation transforms normal cells into cancerous cells, the fluoridation program should have been halted immediately. Common sense would have dictated that. But government doesn't run on common sense. The government agencies realized that if they did so, they would open the door for thousands of lawsuits against the government. Therefore, the stealthy poisoning of our older generation continues. Oscar Ewing himself, when he was given several dosages to choose from a high of 10 parts per million to a low of 1/2 part per million, thought it was being safe in selecting a dosage in the lower range. It turned out that he was wrong. The medical monopoly, perhaps because it is profiting from the steady increase in deaths among the elderly from drinking fluoridated water, refuses to yield on this question. And fluoridation remains one of the four holy waters of the Church of Modern Medicine. Ewing and his minions were also aware of Soviet studies showing that fluorides were extremely important in introducing a docile, sheep-like obedience in the general population. It was well known that for years, breeders of purebred bulls had used doses of fluorides to calm their more intractable bulls, making them much safer to handle. The Soviet Union maintained its concentration camps since 1940 by administering increasing dosages of fluorides to the prison population in its vast empire, the Gulag Archipelago, the largest network of concentration camps in the world, and the envy of every bureaucrat in Washington. American totalitarians alike, in every way, to their Soviet counterparts, also want all dissension stifled, all resistance ended, and a slave population which pays ever-increasing amounts of taxes while having no voice in their own government. The fluoridation campaign has been an important step towards this goal, and it may yet prove to have been the crucial step in the complete Sovietization of America. We know that during recent years, the American people have been afflicted with a strange passivity, ignoring each new outrage inflicted upon them by the ravenous federal agents who descend upon their private property in hordes, brandishing automatic weapons which they have no need of using, herding the frightened victims into pens, and degrading them in a manner which no American ever thought he would see. This passivity and unwillingness to challenge any authority is nearly and merely the first achievement of the fluoridation campaign. This is its initial effect upon the central nervous system. Now, unfortunately, the further deadly effects upon the kidneys, the cumulative effect on the heart and other organs, as well as the widespread development of new and fast-spreading cancer is yet to come. To hasten this cherished objective, not only are American children being given fluoridated water, they also are told to brush their teeth at least 3 times a day with heavily fluoridated toothpaste, which contains 7% of sodium fluoride. Studies show that children habitually ingest about 10% of this solution during each brushing, giving them a daily dose of 30% of the 7% solution in the toothpaste. No doubt, this will hasten the Soviet objective. To combat this outrage, one entrepreneur plans to soon market a non-fluoridated toothpaste, which will be called Morgan's Guarantee Toothpaste. You can trust your guarantee that this toothpaste contains no harmful fluoride. The source of much of this substance is the Aluminum Company of America, which is a $5 billion a year enterprise. Its present chairman is Charles W. Perry, a director of the supposedly right-wing think tank American Enterprise Institute, of which Gene Kirkpatrick is the most highly touted member and principal ornament. The former chairman and still director of Alcoa, William H. Crome, George, is an active director of the well-publicized United States USSR Trade and Economic Council, which is intended to rescue the Soviet Union from economic oblivion. George is also a director of a number of leading defense companies such as TRW, Todd Shipyards, International Paper, and the Norfolk and Southern Railway. Alcoa's president is William B. Renner, who is a director of the Shell Oil Company, a firm now controlled by the Rothschild interests. Other directors of Alcoa are William S. Cook, chairman of the Union Pacific Railroad and base of the Harriman fortune. Alan Greenspan, now chairman of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, whose action in raising the interest rate a few days after he took office precipitated Black Monday, the worst stock market crash in American history. Greenspan's name is not familiar to most Americans, although it should be. He was the chairman of a special commission on Social Security, which finagled a horrendous increase in the amount of withholding tax on every American worker. Greenspan was able to do this because he was a highly paid Wall Street consultant, meaning that he could juggle the figures to come up with whatever result the Rockefeller monopoly desired. And he conducted a specious campaign to persuade the American people that the Social Security program was bankrupt when in fact it had a reserve of $22 billion, plus $25 billion which Congress had borrowed directly from the system and which was a collectible asset. Now, Greenspan also based his demand for a huge increase in the withholding tax, which was nothing but a tax, on a projected 9.6% increase in the inflation rate, when in fact it was only a 3.5% increase. The alarmed public, frightened by President Reagan's absurd claims that the principal beneficiaries of the Social Security system were the idle rich, was hoodwinked into dropping its objections to the increase in tax. However, actual figures on hand at that time showed that only 3% of the elderly had incomes above $50,000 a year, which in itself was hardly a princely sum in these days of inflation, an inflation which itself was largely created by the government's fiscal policies. Greenspan was the star of the great Social Security crisis of 1983, and shrewdly capitalizing on the propaganda barrage that the Social Security system was rapidly going broke. His first finding was that Social Security funds would be in the red from $150 to $200 billion by 1990. And at the same time, he was telling his high-paying corporate clients it would be only one-third of that sum. The final increase was what he had told his clients, and he also forecast that the consumer price index would rise by 9.2% by 1985. And at the same time, he was informing his corporate clients it would only be one-third of that figure. The actual increase was 3.6%. This performance earned Greenspan a prestigious position as partner of J.P. Morgan Company. He is now chairman of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. The New Republic defined the function of this body on January 25, 1988, stating plainly, "The Federal Reserve Board protects the interests of the rich." That's what it was designed for. That's what it does. And that's what it has accomplished. Just take a look at the bailouts of Wall Street and then ask yourself, has it accomplished its primary goal? Remember, the book is called Murder by Injection by Eustace Mullins, and you can get it online from bravenewbookstore.com. Hey, we're out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.